Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode. This is the third edition of the summer series after the end of the 2024-2025 season. This week, I'm joined by Lods and Max. I am Ashley. We were meant to be joined by Charlie, but despite recording at now 10:24 on Saturday morning, Charlie has decided that his bed is more important than Up the podcast. So, what sanctions? Let us know in the comments what you think we should punish Charlie with. I'm sure that there'll be a few good ideas in the YouTube comments section for that. This week, that we were meant to do this last week, but we unfortunately had a better guest. We had Craig McHale-Smith on last week. If you want to go and watch back on that, it was a really good insight, actually, into Craig's three stints at the football club. And there were definitely some things that even I didn't know myself. Like, everybody likes to think they know everything. I think that episode was definitely one of those that you could go back and watch. This week, we're going to do your questions. So we've got probably, I think it's probably close to 25, 30 questions to sort of rattle off. Some we'll all probably have a little dip in. Some we will just tick off as a one-man answer. But that's how this is going to go. I'm going to start off with a question from Reese, and he has asked, do you think that last season was a reality check and we will kick on now? So I am going to kick us off with that one. I don't think that last season was a reality check, if I'm being totally honest. I think that we are sort of stuck in our ways. Fergie's made that decision after the 5-1 loss at Sheffield Wednesday that we then went to lose on penalties in that playoff. And look, I'm not against the style of play and the way that we play, but if we're going to do it, then we really need to sort of stick with it and do it properly. Like, we went away from it, like we've discussed on episodes before, we went away from what we were doing that made us successful. And as soon as we returned to them, we beat teams like Blackpool 5-1. We beat teams like Cambridge 6-1. When we do what we're good at, we're very good at it. So reality check, I'm not sure. I think that we're going to go into this season and expect to hit the ground running again, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, Ash, I completely agree. I think if you look at it in terms of where we were sort of at the end of the last season going into this season, we sort of did fluctuate from our playing style, didn't we? It was, you know, that sort of Bristol Rovers at home sort of game where we just decided to sack off how we've been playing and Fergie started to experiment. He clearly didn't trust the squad, didn't have faith in it. And hopefully, this links us nicely to our next question in terms of the summer window. Dave Lunn 27 on X asked, what does a successful summer look like, incomings and outgoings? And I think a successful summer is actually quite difficult to sort of nail to one thing. We need first team players. We need a bit of a squad overhaul. I think most would agree. That would probably include a goalkeeper, another centre back, a Poku replacement, a central midfielder and a striker. That would then obviously replace Ricky, Poku and Hector. And we'd need those players, whoever they may be. If you want to sort of see our opinions on who we should sign, then you can go and watch our transfer episode. But I think they're in sort of incomings wise, they're the positions we need. So basically a brand new spine of a squad is what we need. Outgoings, I'd like to see a few go on loan. Chris Clark, I'd like to see go on loan. George Nevitt, I'd like to see go on loan. Keeping Malik and Collins, I'd like to see. James Dornelli and Harley Mills, I've sort of already passed on them. I'd love them to stay. I don't think they will. I think we'll sell, because if we sell, it means we can probably build a new spine with the money. And we'll have to see what happens. But without Burrows going anywhere, without selling Dornelli and Mills, I don't think we've got the money to fund a new spine of a squad. But I think really this summer's going to be unsuccessful due to that manner.
Yeah, I think you're right, Max. And just thinking about what a successful summer looks like, I think that realistically, it's not actually losing anybody that was on our retained list as such. Obviously, there's the players that will release. There's the players that are available for transfer. If we're going to get rid of those, then yeah, that's fine. That's fair enough. But a successful summer right now really does just look like keeping hold of who we've got. And I fear that that may mean that we lose players like Archie Collins, we lose players like Malik Mothersill on freeze next summer, because again, we're in the situation that we have been with Kiprianu Poku, Ricky J. Jones, where there's no incentive for them to sign a new contract. In terms of incomings, look, we've had Lisby in. I think that, you know, he's not somebody that's going to come straight into the 11, is he? But I still think we need 9 or 10 players to come through the door, because I don't have any confidence in who we've got at the moment to not get us relegated. Next question is from Zach. He's asked, who do you think would be a bigger loss to the team if we sold them? Archie Collins, Malik Mothersill, or Harley Mills?
I don't think it's Mills. I don't want to offend any left backs out there, but it's not the most important position on the pitch. If we're talking right now, I like Mills, but he only played a handful of games last season. And we have Rio to come back in, who was our initial plan for our starting left back last season. So I think Mills is quite an easy one to replace. So it's a toss up between Collins and Mothersill. I think a player of Mothersill's ability and versatility, and I'd say confidence as well, is probably more expensive to replace. However, his impact on the team right now, we don't really have a comfortable position for him. I think our plan is to play him as the starting number 9 next season. We also have Gustav, so we have got an option there already. And the other two positions that he's played for us can easily be replaced with other players we've got, or we could sign another player. He's not really held down a position to warrant being an important part of the team, as much as I rate his ability, and I do think he'll have a big impact on next season. So I think the one that's hardest to replace, especially given our financial situation, is probably Archie Collins, who I'd say is an all-round midfielder, albeit he doesn't score as many goals as he probably should. But we've already lost Hector Kiprianu. So to lose our other centre midfielder going into next season and replacing both starting centre midfielders will be much more harder for us than losing Malik or Mills, I think.
Yeah, Collins won our Unsung Hero Award, didn't he? And that's really it. Teams don't look at him with the same sort of eyes. I think Collins is probably more integral to our squad than Hector was. That partnership was probably the best in the league, and really it probably was for two seasons at least, both of them together. But I think if I had to pick one that I'd love to stay and sign a new deal, it would have been Collins. I think his ability is so much better than people give him credit for, and I think that's such a positive to have in our team. And I completely agree with you. I think losing Collins would be the most challenging to replace. I would like to caveat that by saying I think all three, it would suck if any of them left. I think it would suck less if Mills left, because I think although he has bundles of talent, a great head on his shoulders, and if he stayed, he could be a future captain here. I just think if we cash now, we could probably save our squad. And if we don't cash in now, we could be seeing A, Malik and Collins walk on a free, and B, getting less money for players like Dornelli and Mills when we get relegated, because I think that's what will happen if we don't make any more signings. So we'll have to wait and see on that regard. But I think Mills going is probably okay. Wouldn't be too difficult to replace, bearing in mind we've got Adebisi, who still has to come in and sort of show us what he can do. And I completely agree with Lods on Malik. He's got bundles of talent, but he just hasn't tied down a position. And we'll have to see where Fergie plays him and what his plans are.
I am going to disagree with you both and say that Malik Mothersill would be the biggest loss. I think that we're going to need somebody with his confidence to fail next season, because the only way I see it now, and look, what are we? It's the 7th of June, is that we're in a relegation battle right now. And you need those players that can grab you by the scruff of the neck. And when it's down and it's negative, that's what Malik Mothersill, I think, is happy to do. Look, he's taken bundles of criticism, whether that be from the manager, whether that be from fans, probably criticises himself. I know that obviously he said before in The Day of the Life that his dad's one of his biggest critics. I'm sure that his dad will tell him when he's not performing well, in that actually to have that player that just is so happy to take the ball no matter whether it's going right or wrong. It's only like Kwame Poku did that for us last year, and we've discussed in our group, haven't we, would we have got relegated if Poku didn't score X amount of goals and get X amount of assists? I think I worked out that it would have been 6 points that Poku earned us. I can't remember exactly if that would have got us relegated or not, but Malik Mothersill, after half a season, two seasons ago, pretty much, well, it was a full season, wasn't it, last season, he's now got to take that mantle and be that important player for me. And I just think that he has the confidence to do it. So that does link then quite nicely to, in terms of who's the biggest loss. Nathan, PUFC Nathan, has asked, if there was only one position we could upgrade in this team, what would it be?
Our wingers, probably, I think. We're seeing... If we look at it in a football term, right, we currently are struggling in the striker position to score goals. If we had two wingers that were top end League One that could score, you look at like Mason Clark and Poku, that sort of partnership that they had, and they really carried us that season in terms of goal output. And we maybe didn't lack that, but remember we scored a lot of our goals with Poku and the team. I still felt that we struggled a bit to get over the hump sometimes and to finish off chances. Now, there is other positions that obviously we desperately need. The most glaring one is a goalkeeper because we don't actually have one. But I think that if we had a keeper or a centre-back in the door already, then wingers would be such a priority. I think it's a bit of an outside shout and people overlook how important wingers are, especially to the system that we play. Hayes and Oddo, I still think there's a player in Hayes, but Oddo is definitely a bit of a hit or miss. I don't know whether he's going to have a flyer or he's going to have a rotter. And to not have a winger that can create goals and score goals is an awful part of the system. And inevitably, we could get a goalkeeper and we can get centre back in. If we don't have those wingers that are so integral to the way Fergie play, we're not going to score the amount of goals that we're so well known for, and the system is going to fail. And if the system fails, then it's going to be relegation, regardless of if we sign a centre back, a central midfielder, a goalkeeper, because we don't have that goal output in for the system.
I disagree. The only goalkeeper on our books is Will Blackmore. We've got basically no depth in midfield or centre back. I'd say wingers is probably fourth biggest priority, if that, to be honest. Look, I think there's a question on Hayes that someone's going to answer later on in this episode. I think he's good enough. I think Odo really kicked on the second half of last season. I honestly think that if we go into next season with those two as our wingers, I think we'll be fine.
Ooh, yeah, difficult position. I think that I'm so torn as to what the right answer to this is, because you hear that a good goalkeeper is only good because of the defence that he's got in front of him. But then the flip side is that a goalkeeper is only good if he's good in his position, that he makes your defence better. So I think for me, the fact that Bielo and Steer both play probably 50% of the games last season each, that's not what you want from a successful goalkeeper. I think that the goalkeeper, and we've got to build from the back ultimately. And if we can find that perfect hybrid of goalkeeper that can save, can confidently catch the ball, can pass well, is happy with the ball at their feet. Look, it's a luxury item. I'm not going to say that we're going to get it right straight off the bat, but I think that the goalkeeper is probably our biggest concern, in that you never knew realistically probably who was going to start last season. It could have been a drop of a hat that Fergie could have changed it whenever he wanted. So I would say that the goalkeeper is probably the most important. The next question is from Ben. That is Ben underscore Chesh. So Hector's gone to Watford. Poku's been linked with pretty much every club above us in the Championship, some in the Prem, and then even some abroad. Do we think that it's a bit odd that we've heard nothing about Ricky J. Jones being linked to another club or to his next club? So I would not say that that's concerning. I think that Ricky's always been that one that people have been interested in. And then if he's never really got it over the line, obviously there was lots of links with Sheffield United last season. There was lots of potential for that he was going to move over in January. So I think that ultimately he's on holiday now. I'm pretty sure, like, once we get to that preseason, somebody will take that gamble on him. It may be that they just want to see him. Look, I think that come July the 1st, I assume that we would probably be able to before then, is that when teams are back for preseason, it may be that teams want to get him in and have him on a trial for a few days or so, just to see what he actually is like, and see whether he fits into what they want to do. I don't think it's concerning. Look, I think that there's a chance that he may go abroad, like there's the chance that Poku goes abroad and we ultimately get nothing from him. That would be disastrous. And that would disappoint me in terms of Ricky, in that he is a Peterborough lad, he is a local lad. Look, he lives 2 miles away from the ground and 2 miles away from the training ground, doesn't he? So it would be a difficult one to accept, but I'm confident that he'll get something sorted by the time that July rolls around. The next one that I think that we've probably sort of covered, but it would be good to hear from somebody who was from PUFC Tom 88, simply asked, do you think that Archie Collins will be a Posh player at the end of the transfer window?
We can only make assumptions, can't we? I don't think any of us know what Archie Collins is thinking right now. Dara said in his most recent podcast that he's offered the highest possible contract he can to the players that are out of contract next summer. So presumably that's both Malik Mills, all of Malik Mills and Archie Collins. Whether it's a money thing that's stalling it, whether it's Archie's waiting to see what signings we make, whether it's other things, we don't know. I would say that Archie comes across as a very professional player. I think when he signed for the club, he was expecting us to be pushing on for Championship. I think he wanted to be part of a promotion-winning squad and to try and help us stabilise in the Championship. Obviously, with last season, we've come so far away from that, and I don't think there's a single Posh fan that thinks we're going to get anywhere near it in the next couple of years. So if Archie Collins has a dream of playing in the Championship and that's the one thing that he really wants, it is possible that he will try and get a transfer, because I don't think he will get that with Posh. Now, the flip side of that is he has settled in Peterborough. He did say he loves the club in his acceptance speech at the awards night. It could be nothing. But if he does really appreciate the club and the city and working for Darren Ferguson, you never know, he might sacrifice the next couple of years of his career just to give us a bit more and maybe try and help us fight. Because as much as we did fall a lot further away from being a promotion winning side last season, I don't think it will take us very long to build that back up again with the right signing. So if he did stick around, I can see us getting up there. It's just completely down to him. My head says he'll go. My heart says he'll stay.
Yeah, I'm also on the fence about this, but I think if you look at it from a logical standpoint for Collins, I think the point that I made earlier, in the fact that a lot of teams don't look at him in the same light as they looked at Hector, I think that's a real key. I don't know where he'd go. We wouldn't know the interest, but I don't know who's been sniffing around. I know people were sniffing around when we were really, really good, but are they going to stiff around for Archie Collins at 26? And he might be an experienced League One player, but will any Championship teams take a gamble? Will it be a top-end League One club that come in for him? Will the bid see what Dara thinks he's worth? I don't know. There's so many questions around it. If he was to stay, we could build around Collins and Malik. And that's the big thing, is if we can keep both of those players. And we played Malik in the 10 and gave him the keys to the attack. We let Collins play at the heart of our midfield. We could have a a serious sort of midfield with one more signing of a good quality central defensive midfielder that can play in the six and can drop into the three that Darren Ferguson really loves to play. If we lose Malik and Collins, we've then got to replace two starters, and that would be horrible. So I'm sort of in the same boat. I don't think he'll go. I think my head and my heart both say he won't go. I don't see why he would. If he does go, I genuinely think it's solely money, because I just can't see why you'd want to leave when I know we're in a bit of a bad spot right now, but you could have a squad built around you as a player. I wouldn't see why you'd want to go. But I can also see he probably wants to play high, wants to push himself and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it could be interesting, couldn't it, to see where he ends up and hopefully he stays, because I really do think we could build a squad around him.
Oh, I can give you one reason why he would want to leave, and that's because we're going to be absolutely dross next season, unfortunately, Max. Next up is a question from Harry Stevenson, which is, what's one player you think will sign that you don't want us to sign? Now, I've been quite vocal on this before. I will be very disappointed if we get Sam Hughes in the door. I think that even though I'm happy to accept that we might be getting relegated this year, I think that signing Sam Hughes is an acceptance from the club that we really think that we're going to be in that battle and that we're going to be in that relegation. I don't want that. I think that when you sort of look at the options that are available to us, I think that Sam Hughes actually might be off the table now. I know that Stockport have lost at least one of their defenders. They are potentially going to want to keep him around now until they've got replacements in. So he may be somebody that we, if we are going to sign him, that we would end up bringing in towards the back end of the transfer window, which is not what Fergie likes. It's not what DMAT wants. Everything sorted before the season kicks off, doesn't he? Maybe with one or two to add in towards the end in terms of loans. But we've listened to his pod this week, and he doesn't want any loans through the door. And in outfield positions, I think that the goalkeeping position was probably the only one that he was interested in potentially taking a loan. But we know that that hasn't worked for us before either.
I think, well, I read this question and I was really struggling to think of an answer. I think my issue would be the complete opposite of that, which is not signing players that I think we should sign. I think that would be the biggest issue for us this summer. I don't want us to go into next season and just go, oh, that person will do. And I don't want to dig people out last summer, but it felt like we did that with players like Danae Bryan Brady, for example. We were lined up to sign a different midfielder, and then we went, Brian Brady's played all right in the friendlies. We'll just chuck him. He can be one of our midfielders. I don't want us to do that again this summer with the likes of Bolu, for example. I don't think he should be included as one of our starting strikers. I don't think he'll benefit from having that amount of game time next season. And I don't want us to not sign a capable striker in replacement of that, because I think that's partly what caused us so many issues last season.
Yeah, I think that you're potentially right, Lods. So I mentioned, obviously, DMAT said that we might bring a goalkeeper on loan. This one, Max, I think is going to be on you, because you know me, I don't have a clue about any players that aren't posh players. Scotty, or should I say Big Ginger Bosch, after, you know, he slandered DMAC. If you ever discuss goalkeeper, would love a discussion on Philippe Marshall, if we could get a loan. Max, any ideas?
Well, my boring answer is no. I think if we're going to go to League Two, I've named two goalkeepers in our transfer episode that I would prefer. And that's, if we're going to get a loan, it's Goodman. If we're going to do a permanent transfer, it's Alex Bass. I think both goalkeepers are better, both have better save percentages, both are more commanding, and his stats are average. 16 clean sheets, I think it's 48 conceded in 48 conceded in 46 for Crewe. Doesn't excite me. I think the two I said before excite me more. And even then, I think there'll be goalkeepers in League One that we could probably compete for if we wanted to get some with League One experience. I don't think Marshall would be anywhere But then again, you never know. I think his stats are average. If he's cheap, then Dara definitely could get him in. I'm not saying it's not a possibility, but if you want who I would like, he wouldn't be in my top three.
That's fair enough, Max. I am really struggling with optimism in terms of our signings this season. One thing that was announced this week is that we have announced three of our preseason games. We have got Stamford away on a Tuesday night, Boston away on a Saturday, and then Grimsby away the following Saturday, which has raised... The article definitely sort of raised some questions, didn't it? And this is one that Daniel TRP has sent in, is the lack of preseason games at home and blaming the pitch, for which is a poor excuse. Surely fans have spent enough without travelling away to preseason games. Seems the club don't want loss making home preseason games. Now, this is an interesting one for me, and I think that we sort of fall foul from where we are in the world and in the country, in that we're too far away from like the northern Premier League teams and Championship teams to come down and have pre-season with us. We're too far away from London, even though we're like within an hour. They don't want to be coming up to Peterborough for a pre-season. And actually, when you factor in that most of the Premier League teams now do pre-season like tournaments, don't they, in like America or like East Asia, those ways, I think that it's not a bad thing that we're happy to let the pitch sit. Like, I've got the whatever they were doing, they were scraping up basically all the dead moss. Look, I thought that actually the Bolton game, the posh pitch looked the best that it had after the end of a season for many, many moons. Now, whether that was just through good luck this season or whether it was that the ground team put in a lot of hard work, I'm not sure that we'll know the answer to that. But when you compare it to what we had in like the COVID season, obviously that a very extenuating circumstance in that there was a burst pipe, or the seasons where it chucked it down and we played on it when it was had the covers on, all that sort of stuff. If I remember correctly, I don't think that we had a game this season where the covers were on and the pitch froze. Food for thought. I'm not sure. I don't remember there ever being game. And it, like, obviously the season before, there was loads of games where it was like, oh, is the game on? Is the game off? They left the covers on right till the last minute. That kills the pitch. I know that for certain, because you've got this heavy blanket on it that just flattens the grass down and then the players play on it. So look, I'm not too concerned about no home games. I know that obviously we'd probably get like, what, 1,000, 1,500 people through the door. But actually, it's quite nice to head to some of the to some grounds and definitely get some ground ticks done for like places like Grimsby. People will be able to tick that off for a pre-season game, right?
Charlie Newman asks, what impact do you think Kieran Hayes will have next season?
I think you have a... This is really annoying, because I made an excellent point about wingers in a system, and now I'm going to say that I really like Kieran Hayes. I really like the way Kieran Hayes plays. I think he came in when Pocket got injured. It was a huge question mark. And it was like, oh well, we've just lost all of our goal output, and it was overly scary in terms of where it was going to come from. And he came on, and I believe that game I watched. And if anybody knows me, I'm relatively reactionary, but when he came on, I thought, well, if he's going to play the way he's playing now for the rest of the season, then I'm not overly scared actually about losing Poku. A pre-season with and some end products, and we could have a serious player there. I think he's got everything he needs to be a top end League One winger. Just lacks that end product, doesn't he? He's so good with his feet. He's tricky. He can skip past players. Sometimes his decision making's wrong, and his output's a bit poor at times. I think if you rectify that over pre-season, have a summer, we don't know what sort of Kieran Hayes we could see. But those are the two things that I think personally he should work on. But I think he's a great lad, and I think he's excellent. So I think he's going to have a big impact in the squad, and I think he's nailed on that starting position for himself.
Yeah, Hayes was one of those sort of like new recruits and potentially looked like he was going to be a different sort of recruit and a way that we go, which then does link nicely into... We've got two questions. They're relatively similar. I'll go through them both. They're from Ewan and Matt, PUFC. So Ewan has asked, What do you make of our transfer policy of trying to uncover young gems in the lower leagues and then looking back at the success and failures? And then Matt PFC has said, we've seen early signs of a shift in transfer strategy to keep players for 4 to 5 years. If we signed lower league players on longer term deals, would you accept 2 seasons of mid-table to have a real push on in the third season, aka a 3-year plan?
Yeah, both of these things are things that I've been banging the drum about for quite a while now. So the transfer policy of signing young players is something that Dar has done since pretty much the day he came to Peterborough. I don't mind that. I think we've had a lot of success with it in the past. All of the great players that we've had that have moved on have made us a lot of money. And I think the money side of things is the most important thing. It is our biggest revenue maker, is selling on players for big amounts of money. You simply can't do that with older players because they hold no value, or at least they decrease in value as they stay with us. We have had a lot of failures. I think our hit rate is a lot lower than what we talk about, because normally the line comes from Dara about how it's our identity and we're really good at doing it. He's not going to talk about the failures that he's made. But if you go back and look at the players that we've signed over the last 10, 15, 20 years, you'll see how many names that just don't exist in football anymore because we've taken a punt on them, didn't work out. I don't think we should stop doing that. Like I said, it is our identity. It is our biggest revenue maker. The thing that I've been banging the drum about is signing some more experienced players to go alongside with them. We can have a whole squad of young players as long as we have 2 or 3 experienced heads to keep control of them, help Fergie out. When the going gets tough and they're chasing results, or they've let the game slip away from them, those experienced heads will have such a huge positive impact. And we saw it with Sam Hughes at the back end of last season. The other question there from Matt about the contract lengths. So the one thing that we absolutely cannot do is let our youngsters go for free, because then what is the point? You know, we signed Kwame Poku in the Championship. We weren't expecting him to play much in the Championship season. He went into League One. He took... First season, he didn't really have much of an impact. Second season, he was really good. Wasn't our most key player. And then in his final season of his contract, he becomes our best player and we have to lose him on a free. We can't keep letting that happen. We need to make sure that we either get their contracts sorted early so that they're always signed for us, or we need to sell them, get them in long enough so we can sell them before their contract ends. So the fact that we've signed Lisby now on a 3-year contract with an option to extend for a 4th year, I think is really good, because let's say his first season, he is rubbish and he does take time to settle. If he kicks on in that second season, we potentially have 2 other seasons to get another year out of him and sell him for more money. And that is definitely what we need to be doing. And with the 1-year extension that we've added in as well, if it is a failure, we can get rid of him after 3 years and it's not an issue. Like I said, I think we should carry on with the policy. I think we just need to tweak it a little bit. I don't think Dara will personally. I think he'll look at the financial, how much wages the experienced players will demand. And like I said earlier, their lack of sell-on value. I don't think he'll want to sign these players. Whether or not Lisby's a good signing or not, I don't know. I've not seen him. Max, I know you you mentioned him in the Transfer Targets episode, didn't you? Do you know much about him? Can you enlighten our listeners?
Lisby wasn't really a player necessarily on my radar. When I heard we were linked with him, I did remember some of his performances, especially that performance for Cray Valley against Charlton, was obviously the biggest one that really made a name for himself in non-league. And he's quite active on social media, Lisby. And I think he's going to be a fan favourite. I really do. I don't know how long it will take him to kick on. I think Chris Conclark has sort of scared me a little bit in terms of how long it takes these players with good numbers in the National League to kick on. Because I still think there's a player in Chris Conclark, and I don't think anybody will ever dissuade me of that. But I do think that Lisby will be a fan favourite. I'm hoping he can hit the ground running a bit. He seems to have a real chip on his shoulder and a point to prove that he can be professional, that he can go to the highest level. And that's the mentality I like. Malik has a very similar mentality. Maybe saying he's going to win the Ballon d'Or in 2030 or whatever it was is the sort of upper echelons of that mentality. But it's all the same principle, isn't it? It's that these guys want to play at the highest level. They're not here for money. They're not here for a sort of a jaunt. They want to push themselves to the highest level. And that's what we should build our squad around. And I think Lisby has that. His goal record in the National League is fine for a winger. And at Braintree, I don't think they've had the most fantastic season. He's not like in a top end sort of National League side. So if he was, I have no doubt that the output would be higher. But what I will just loop back round on before I finish was this squad is desperate for some experience, I think. And that is, I bang on about it all the time, but we have really missed like a Johnson Clark Harris this season, who just sat with those younger players last year and helped them, was a leader on and off the pitch, and sort of guided them in the right sort of way. We just miss that character in the dressing room. And like, I presume to an extent Jed Steer was that sort of character. I don't think he was just sort of the same as Jono, but in terms of like a natural born leader, I think DJ is very good at what he does, but I don't think he'd be a first choice captain for me. Johnson Clark Harris obviously was, and he really helped that team. We should look at some of these players who might not cost a lot of money, but have had League One experience, who are maybe are even like 28 to 30 years old, who are probably coming towards the end of their career, but have bundles of experience that will come on and do you a job at the end of games to see games off. People might get upset about it, but I'd be quite happy that we've gone down that route. We only need 2-3 of those sorts of players, but to have a dressing room of leaders is something that I think we desperately need.
I'm not so sure. I think that we've just got to stick with it. We're kind of stuck where we are. Any experience comes at a cost, doesn't it? In terms of the 3-year plan, I still think that we just sort of fell foul and caused our own issues by being good in the season that we got to the playoffs against Oxford. That would have been season one of a transition season. And look, we fully deserved to get that far. And we had what I think was probably the best team in the league. We just were sloppy in periods. We had that 4-game period in February, I think it was, of that season, where we lost 4 on the bounce. I think that raised the bar so high that anything after that was always going to be a disaster. And that actually, if we'd have been able to have reset and had that lower expectation season in that season, then the expectations wouldn't have been so high. That's why we're disappointed this season, right? Is because we've gone 2 playoff seasons in a row, and then all of a sudden we're in what, like 18th finishing the season. I feel more confident knowing that, like I said before, like players like Manny, players like Wallen, they've played full seasons now. They've got that experience. So I just think that last season should be our season one. Yes, we've lost Pocky. Yes, we've lost Cipriani. Yes, we've lost Ricky. Last season should be our season one, and actually give them this season, hopefully, and then the season after would be our season three, where we should really be looking to push on. And if we don't get that, then ultimately I think that we're probably going to be stuck in League One or looking down to League Two more often than we are looking towards the Championship, unfortunately. Next up is probably a relatively quick-fire question from Tomek. He's asked, what is the worst player you have watched at Posh?
We are in the unfortunate position here where us three only really remember the DMAC era. And let's be honest, the worst player that me and Ashley have certainly seen at Posh was before Dara. How old would we have been then, Ashley? Like 13, 14? The name that jumps out at me from that time is Trevor Benjamin. I wasn't really old enough to really appreciate the game and every player on the pitch. I just remember him being an absolute donkey, where he wasn't fast. He missed sitters all the time and he didn't put any effort in whatsoever. And if you look at his career, I don't think he really held down a club for more than 1 or 2 years. So, yeah, Trevor Benjamin would be my answer. I'm sure if Dell was on, I'm sure he could rattle off a whole list of names, or at least try to, knowing Dell.
It was a difficult one because I've sat here reading this question and I thought, well, it'd be really easy to pick somebody from last season, wouldn't it? Like, Nevitt looked absolutely useless multiple times. We've put players like Wally making mistakes, Bilo, somebody like that. But I tried to just think back, and then I ultimately couldn't. So I'm going to bottle it on this one, because I do not want to just slag somebody off that's going to be part of our team next season. But I think that if you look back, like Lord said, if you look back over the years, there's been some absolute dross. When you go back to that period after we got relegated the second or third time from the Championship, and then it took us 8 years to get promoted, I can't tell you a player's name, but it would be somebody in that period. There were some absolute rotters in there.
Sam Curtis. He was terrible from start to finish. What a failure of a project, of an experiment, whatever you want to call it. Terrible. I hated every second. He didn't make us any better. In fact, he made us worse. And serious vendetta. I think it actually has to be Sam Curtis. I can't, on the top of my head, I actually can't think of anybody that I've watched and like just sighed every time he'd come on. Just like, I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah, Lodz has given me the answer in the chat. Joe the Goal Gormley, who managed like two or three goals for Posh before being shipped out to the absolute cannon fodder levels. Next up then is, what was the most memorable match in Peterborough United's history at London Road Stadium from Ducks?
We've got quite a lot to choose from there, haven't we? I think if we're going for the match, it's probably the 4-4 draw with Cardiff, where we were 4-0 down at half time, and then scored, I think, in the 91st and the 93rd minute to equalise, which, by the way, I did ask Craig McHale Smith about, if you haven't already watched the episode. In terms of the atmosphere and the occasion, it will be one of the playoff semis. I think they're both incredibly high up there for me. The Sheffield Wednesday one, where we won 4-0, and then obviously the MK Dons one, where we won 2-0. I will probably pick the MK Dons one. It was on my birthday. We had a bit of a rivalry of MK Dons at the time. That squad, I think, was just so much more enjoyable to watch. And I think the atmosphere that day as well is probably the best I've ever seen at London Road.
I'm going to agree with the Sheffield Wednesday 4-0. If we just forget what happened after, I think that's one of my most memorable days in the London Road End and in the stadium as a whole. It was fantastic. I went with all my... It was like sort of the last year that we were all at sixth form. So a lot of our friends, my friends were moving on. It was like our sort of our last game at home together before, we all went our separate ways. So it was really nice in that sort of regard to sort of end the end of our sixth form period on a high. And unfortunately, the low came the week after. But I did really enjoy that game as a whole. It was fantastic. And I'd do anything to just go back and watch that game again. And maybe change the outcome of the second one.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's it, isn't it, really? Like, there were lots of memorable games, but it's the... that 4-0, that was, like you say, Max, I brought all of my mates along. It was like, this was a team that finished, 20 points ahead of us in the league, and we'd lost to them 1-0. Can't remember whether we beat them at home. We may have done, but there was... Absolutely, I gave us no chance, and we just came out all guns blazing. And 4-0, it should have been 5, like what we said before, haven't we? We don't want to look back on it. But yeah, if Poku buries that chance, then who knows where we would be right now. Next up is a question from George Simon. He would like to know, do we expect us to get straight back to top 8 success? I'm going to be very short and brief on that one. I don't know if either of you two have any comments to pass on that, but no is the simple answer. I don't think we're going to be anywhere near the top eight. I think that the bottom eight is more likely than top eight. I think that if we are going to be top eight of any league, it will be League Two in the next sort of 3 or 4 seasons, unfortunately.
Yes, I do. I think that might not be this season, but I do think we'll be back there again. And hopefully, look, I mean, it depends on the players we bring in as well, which will influence my decision on where we lie massively. But right now, I don't see why if we recruit sensibly and we have a good preseason and we see glimpses from players that they can really kick on, I don't see why eighth isn't impossible. You know, it's going to be very hit or miss. We're either going to miss and finish rock bottom, or we're going to hit, and I think we probably could get eighth. I don't see why eighth is such a challenge if we recruit sensibly, but it's all going to be about this summer rather than last season and building on this squad. That's going to be the key to that, I think.
Yeah, so that does lead us again onto the next question from Ryan. He's asked, if we're firmly in the relegation zone after 10 games, would you sack Fergie?
I think it'd be a difficult decision. I'm going to say I would. And I think sometimes we are just desperate for some new ideas. And I know the dynamic won't work between Darren and another manager. It hasn't really worked. Fergie's his guy. And for all it's worth, I would love him to stay forever if he could. You know, I think he's been an excellent servant. And I do think that his style of play has proven it can work. But if he can't get us out of this rot with this group of players, I think it's time to give somebody else a go and see if they can get us out of the situation that we find ourselves in if Fergie can't. And I wouldn't want him to in his final stint, as he said multiple times, who knows what could happen. He could come back for a fifth one. But in his final stint, would you want him to have a relegation from League One as his on his record, as his final sort of parting with Posh? I wouldn't want that. And I don't think he'd want either. I think eventually he'd walk out the door if we were in the relegation zone. I think 10 games is too early as well, may I add. 10 games is too early if we're firmly in the relegation zone after 10 games. Like, nobody's firmly in the relegation zone after 10 games. Like, that's still so early on. But I would sack him if we're there halfway through the season, for example, or even earlier than that. If we're watching the football on the pitch as well and it's terrible. Like, it's not like we're falling short, if that makes sense. So I think there's definitely a good question. And I think it's a difficult one to answer as well.
Max, if we get relegated, I don't think Fergie will see a relegation as his final stint at Peterborough, because he'll be back in 3 years' time anyway, so it doesn't matter. Your point about being firmly in the relegation implies that we'd have to like lose pretty much every single one of our first 10 games. If we did that, then yes, something's got to give, hasn't it? And it probably will be Fergie. If we have a bad start and we are down there, there's other factors that you've got to have a look at, like you've alluded to. Our playing style, is he doing the right things? Are we playing well? Are we trying to create things like we're supposed to? That's what he's been asked to do, essentially, isn't it? He's been asked to take this young squad and play some entertaining football. If he's doing that and the players are letting him down, it comes down to recruitment, doesn't it? And I think 99% of Posh fans are going to blame Dara if there's an issue with the recruitment again going into next season. I think Fergie will be relatively blame-free. If McAntony somehow manages to spend $5 million on players and they're all experienced League One and Championship players and Fergie still can't perform with them, then yeah, that's going to be on Fergie. But what are the chances of that happening? I can't see it. I think we're going to get a load of untested in League One players, and it's Fergie's just got to do the best he can. And if it's bottom half after 10 games, then so be it.
As we record right now, I am never sacking Fergie, whether we get relegated or not. However, I think that there's a very real chance that by the time that the 2nd of August rolls round, if Fergie hasn't seen the people through the door that he wants, that he will not be our manager. I think that he will walk. I think that he will just look at the squad and go, look, I can't work with the 20 players that we had from last season because they were crap. I think that he's looking for signings, and so far we've made one. Max mentioned it before, didn't he? He said that we're going to get four or five through the door before the first day of pre-season, which is now less than 2 weeks away. Something's got to change in the next, 10 days or so before we get people through the door, and I can't see it happen. I think that Fergie's going to be so annoyed that he's going to say, look, I can't work with these. And he is going to walk out of the door, unfortunately. So that does sort of take us on to look into the season ahead. We've got a couple of questions. We've got one from Alan Sees, which is, what are our thoughts on being 28-1 for promotion, with some of the teams promoted from League Two being better odds? And then one from Ben Chesh again, which is, which of the newly relegated and promoted teams are you looking forward to Posh playing against?
Yeah, so for me, it's pretty self-explanatory. I don't actually know whether a lot of people would agree, but it's Luton and Bradford, in terms of Luton being the newly relegated and Bradford being the newly promoted. The grounds I'm most looking forward to going to will definitely be the ones that I look out for when the fixtures come out, and look forward to marking down and going. And then, what are your thoughts on us being 28-1 for promotion, with both teams being better odds, i.e. Bradford? That is scary, isn't it? I think they're definitely influxed by this poor season that we've just had. I think if we'd had a season where we finished mid-table-ish, I genuinely think that our odds would not be. It's just because we've had one poor season. And as Ashley said, you look at Dornelli has played a lot this season. Wallin and Manny have basically played full seasons. De Havilland stepped in when he can, probably got more professional minutes. Oddo and Hayes has never really had a stint in League One, I don't think. And Oddo was in League Two. So they've had stints. Malik's basically had a full season, a full proper season, playing the way that he wants to play. So if you look at that and the experience that we've gained, you'd like to think the only way is up, wouldn't you? But the world has a funny way of working, and yeah, I think maybe we could be in trouble. But again, let's wait for the recruitment. I'm not worried about the newly promoted teams being 28 to higher odds than 28-1. I'm not worried about that. I think the bookies have got it that way because we really sucked this season. We were really poor. So that's probably the reason why they've got it. But again, look at the influx of experience and the talent. We do still have talent in this squad. It's just, can we get the best out of it? It's the question, and we'll have to wait and see on that.
I'm not concerned about us being 28-1 for promotion. I am more interested in seeing any potential relegation odds. Obviously, creators like Callum Fowler have already relegated us. People like are looking at us and going, there's no way that they can survive again. It's the relegation odds that I'm interested in. I'm interested to see if the bookies put us in the four favourites to go down. I think that that'll give us a really good indicator, because I'm pretty sure teams like Burton should be finishing before us, or below us even, sorry. And then, I don't know, am I confident that we're better than some of the teams that have come up? I'm not so sure. So I think it's going to be tight, but I think it's going to make for an interesting season. That pretty much covers the majority of the footballing questions. We do now have some short quiz questions, I guess. Andrew Griffin, obviously this was yesterday. So what do we think of the club not putting out a tweet about D-Day? Honestly, I don't think the club has ever put a tweet out before, and it's just the way that it falls. Now, I'm happy to be corrected on this, but Eid moves every year, and it moves like 2 weeks or 4 weeks further forwards. So there's a chance in what sort of 10 years' time that it falls around Christmas Day. Eid is ultimately the Muslim festival that is the celebration of what is their Christmas, right? The club puts out tweets for Christmas Day. The club puts out New Year tweets. The club puts out Chinese New Year tweets. It's just purely coincidence that they've fallen on the same day. And why should the club be putting out tweets for D-Day when they've never done it before? Just because it falls on another day. I think that people that are winding themselves up about the club not putting a tweet out need to probably take a long, hard look at themselves and, you know, maybe find some time to, or find something that fills up their time if they're really getting protective over that. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think that it's something that the club needs to do. I just think that people that were getting like butthurt about us, that's a bit weird. That, like, I actually think that the club should be putting out more tweets for what are the minority supporter groups to help them feel included in the club. And I saw somebody reply, whether it was a sarcastic reply, obviously there is a high Asian population, we don't see a large amount of them coming to watch Posh. Can the club do more to potentially try and get them through the door and boost our attendance every week. I don't know, that might be something. That's the way that you want everybody to feel comfortable at the ground. Myself, as a white British 30-year-old male, I don't feel uncomfortable at the ground, but there will be some of those minority groups that do feel uncomfortable at the ground because they reply, see tweets and replies to that, then go, well, hang on, I don't want to be involved with that. And actually, that disappoints me more, that people feel obliged to make comment on something that is a celebration. And ultimately, I don't think that it's their place to comment on it. Total flip side now is a question from Reese, who would like to know, out of everyone in the pod, who is winning in a scrap?
This is a difficult one to answer because out of all seven of us, I don't think any of us are fighters, are we? So on that basis, I would have to go with Ashley purely on size. I think it'll take a lot of punches to get him onto the floor, but I think Dell back in his day might have stood a chance. That's all I'm going to say.
I reckon I could do a 1v6 and I'd take you all on. That's how confident I am. Not a chance. Charlie, I'm just going to flick him away. Max isn't going to be able to get close enough to me because he's just going to like knock his chin on, not on the wall. Harry, look, Harry's probably not going to show up because there's the fights. That's down to five already. And then look, all I've got is Lods, Dell and John to take on. So it's a 1v3 basically, isn't it, right? I'm pretty confident I could do that. Max knows I've nearly taken Max out with a fork. Harry lives in fear of me chucking him over hoardings whenever we're sat near the front of a ground. That I'm going to bat myself in the friendliest way possible. I'm not going to hurt any of you, but you're not going to do any damage to me, so I'm going to win, naturally. Right, Max, you got any comments on that you want to add? Didn't think so. I'll get you with my wooden fork at the next away game. So, Mearside Posh has asked me whether I've got a Cobblers season ticket. No, I haven't. But I believe that Dante Logistics may be sponsoring Faith Horner again next season as part of her career sponsorship. So there's every chance that I'll be attending Northampton games as long as they don't clash with Posh Women games. That's what we're looking to do. We're going to look to get down to more Posh Women's game next season. Try and offer some content from that. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be going to some Northampton games when they offer me and give me free tickets. But, you know, at the end of the day, at least I've not paid to sponsor Cambridge with my sticker business. Hey ho. Mearside Posh again. Has Dell already worked out his excuse for not going to Wigan? Dell's not here to answer, so I can only provide it. It's the first one that he's looking for. When June 26th comes round, it's the first one that he's going to look for. I'm sure that he's going to basically clear his diary completely so that he has absolutely nothing on around that. Mearside Posh again. Does John stay angry all year round, or does his blood pressure stabilise in off-season?
Obviously John's not here to answer, but I think I can probably answer it for you. John gets angry at me. I don't think John has ever not been angry at me because I'm too optimistic. And John might be one of the most pessimistic people I've met for good reason. I mean, it's probably easy to be pessimistic in terms of anger. I don't think John's an angry person, but when Posh do badly, he just loses his head a little bit. But no, I think John is relatively calm until I'm too optimistic and then he loses it with me.
And then to wrap us off, we've got a tweet from Only Posh Fans. Very, very weird, very weird tweet. So I'm going to split this down because there's three questions. Let's have answers from everybody. I will go first with jam sandwich. Yes or no? Yes for me.
Yes, for me.
Yes.
Next up, with or without butter? Now, I can't be asked to butter when it's just bread. If it was toast, I would butter and jam. If it's just bread, I am only putting jam on. If that makes sense.
I'm buttering both sides of my bread. I think you're weird if you don't put butter on before the jam, personally.
What? Well,
hang on a minute. You've just said you butter both sides of a piece of bread.
Sorry, both slices is what I meant, not both sides. Pick it up, you're just like, it falls out of my hand.
Oh, it's gone.
It's like, oh, I don't know what he's pressed, but he's just totally disconnected.
Where was I?
I dropped the sandwich on my mouth, so that accent clicked back.
Jam sandwich, butter. Yeah, I'm with Ash. I'm buttered toast, but I won't butter my bread there. I don't really particularly like butter on my bread.
Then next and final question to wrap it up. What are we doing? If you were eating it for lunch and it was accompanied by crisps, would you eat the crisps first or the sandwich? Now, I am going crisps first, sandwich second, because I want the savory item and then into the sweet item. I would see a jam sandwich more as like a desserty type thing in that concept. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I could easily eat that. Like, it's just that little bit of sugar at the end of the meal, right? And so Chris would go first. Obviously, I don't think I'd ever have just those two things. I'd like a pork pie, maybe like a nice Plowman's, maybe with a jam sandwich afterwards. But yeah, definitely crisp first for me.
No, I'm going crisp second. I do understand that logic, though, Ashley. They're very versatile, aren't they, jam sandwiches? You can sort of have them for multiple purposes. You can have them as part of a meal, or you could have them as like a snack, or like you say, even a dessert. But probably it's part of a lunch if I've got crisps there. Either the crisps are going in the sandwich, don't knock crisps and jam in the sandwich together, because that is good, or I'm eating them afterwards.
I was going to say, somebody has to say that they're going to eat the crisps at the sandwich at the same time. That is brilliant. I don't know whether I'd knock it or not. I'd have to try it first. But I think off first glance, that sounds minging. I think, depends on the flavour of crisps, I think, is my answer. I think usually I'd eat them. I'd eat them first, but if it's like a, it depends what I like more. Like if it's like a prawn cocktail, I might have that second, because I probably like that more than a jam sandwich. So, but look, if it's like ready salted or something, then like I'll have it first, because I like the jam sandwich more.
I've got a separate question as well that wasn't asked. What's your favourite jam? I'm going to go for seedless and raspberry.
Yeah, I'm raspberry, but I like seeds in mine. I tend to believe it or not, this is actually really weird, which did make me sort of question this, like, this account. It must be somebody that knows me, because I actually bought jam last Sunday morning to have in a sandwich, and raspberry with seeds for me.
Strawberry or raspberry for me.
Fucking hell, pick a side, Max. Jesus Christ.
Well, I'll go strawberry to be different then. I'll be a bit of a maverick.
Right, well, on that bombshell, I think we're done. Absolute chaos. We were doing really well. Lods dropped out. We started talking about jam sandwiches. Maybe we just need to become up the jam cast. Like, there must be a bit of capacity for that. Like, how many jams can we try? Maybe that's something that we'll all have to bring. Like, we'll have to do it like a jam tasting session. That's this episode wrapped up. Don't ask me what we're recording next week. If you'd like to throw some suggestions into the comments, that would be great. I'm sure that we'll muster something up. If not, I'm sure that there's a long list that Lods has created of things that we can do. But at the moment, we have no plans to record anything, but we will be back next Monday with something for you all to listen. I think that's everything from us. Please do like, please do subscribe, please do comment on the posts. We're trying to branch out. We're on Facebook now as well, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. We're putting YouTube shorts out. Grimsby Picnic away. Max is just putting comments. That's everything. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Jamcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at UpThePoshCast. Let us know your feedback, give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer up the podcast.
Can I just say, you know when you're talking about Mavericks and you like discuss what makes them a Maverick, I've never ever heard anyone say, oh yeah, that person's a Maverick because they like strawberry jam.